Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And we are off and running live on a Saturday in Atlanta. It is indeed the Nick Kale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey.com and the Odyssey.com app. Great to be with you guys today. What do you say we hang out for? Oh, I don't know. Let's call it the next 3 hours. We'll take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. Phone number, as always, to be a part of the show, 404-741-0929. On Twitter, at Nick Kale. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line always in play. We are absolutely loaded today. Joe Patrick coming up at 3:20 on the Braves. Sarah Spencer at 4:20 on the Hawks. Jarvis Davis, 5:20 on the Atlanta Falcons. Garrett Chapman is hanging out today for Dylan Matthews. He's the chairman of the board. Garrett, what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
I'm fantastic, man. It's another beautiful day in the city of Atlanta. Braves baseball happening. Atlanta United tomorrow. It's a great time.
Definitely not slow times. That is for sure. We are never drying up on the content in the city of Atlanta. So, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Braves. Great to see 38,000 and change last night. The first game where 100% capacity was permitted. Let me start here, though. Kind of a little combo opening segment here. About 5 or 6 minutes on the Braves, 5 or 6 minutes on the Hawks. So the Braves last night, they get rocked 12-2 by the Phillies. And Charlie Morton gets absolutely shelled. The guy couldn't get out of the first inning. He goes two-thirds of an inning, 6 runs, none of which were earned, by the way, which we'll explain in a second. 4 hits, 2 walks, 36 pitches. So it's crazy because he allows a home run, walks 2 others, lets in 6, but they go down as 0 earned because of a passed ball. His ERA, believe it or not, considering he pitched two-thirds of one inning, his ERA actually went down from 5.08 to 4.98. Because baseball, after all, is one of the more quirky sports. But, you know, you watch that game last night, and you look at Morton, and it's like, flip a coin, you have no idea which Morton you're going to get. Are you going to get the Morton who's given us 3 really bad starts this year? Are we going to get the Charlie Morton who has given us 3 good to quality starts? Are we going to get the one performance where he's just, middle of the road, mediocre? But this is what you get when you're the Atlanta Braves and your ownership is cheap and you go with somebody who's, approaching 38 years old on the back end of your rotation. And I always say this about baseball. Like, I'm not going to freak out positively or negatively in small sample sizes. But I do think baseball, you can make declarations, definitive statements at 3 different points of the season. And we're coming up on the first measuring stick, which is Memorial Day weekend, which is about 3 weeks from now. And then, of course, the All-Star break, and then the stretch run. Labor Day weekend is your team in the hunt for the playoffs. But you look at this Braves team, my God, folks, streaking left and right. Lose 4, win 4, lose 4, win 5 of 7, lose 2, win 3, lose 4, win 3, lose last night. It has been a unbelievable roller coaster of a season. 15-17 right now through 32 games. They are 4th in the East, but they're only 2.5 games out of first place, which is currently held by the Philadelphia Phillies, and we'll see game two tonight of a three-game weekend set. But we are now, if you do the math, 32 down, 130 to go. We're 20% of the way through the season, one-fifth of the way done, and Ronald Acuna exempt from criticism because, well, he is a freak of nature, and he's performing. But I'm just looking at some of these guys as we get to the 20% point of the season. And again, I'm not going to overreact. Still 3 weeks to go until Memorial Day weekend. But some of the things that I've seen so far in, you know, a quality sample size of 32 games is not the most inspiring stuff right now. Marcell Ozuna hitting .216, is on base .290. Yeah, I get it. 4 home runs, 20 ribbies, quality pace, give or take 20 and 100, 20 home runs, 100 ribbies. Not bad. But when you give him the long-term financial commitment this past offseason, as Alex Anthopoulos did, I got to just be honest and say it's in the back of my head that, all right, my man got his long-term commitment, and he deserves it. He gambled on himself last year on a one-year deal, but he hasn't been great. Dansby Swanson, same thing. Was last year kind of a outlier for his career. Right now, he's hitting .216, on base .289, almost mirror identical numbers as Marcell Ozuna. Freddie Freeman, yeah, he's got 7 home runs, 18 ribbies. That's a pace of about .35-90, but he's batting .195. Ozzie Albies has been disappointing. Travis d'Arnaud, disappointing. And then you get to the arms. Charlie Morton's ERA is just about 5. Drew Smyly, good Lord, I don't even want to bring the number to the table. But it's over 6. I know Max Fried, we're dealing with injuries. We've yet to see Soroka. Max Fried's ERA over a touchdown plus a 2-point conversion. You know, right now the only exemptions with arms in the Ronald Acuna you're doing your job category, Waskar Ynoa and Ian Anderson. I got to tell you, I'm frustrated with the wildly inconsistent results of this team. Like, I feel like I'm on, you know, at an amusement park on a roller coaster, up and down, I'm gripping onto the little arm bar in the front of the roller coaster, white knuckles, palms sweaty, little uneasiness in my stomach. I mean, every night, you know, it's like we go through these stretches of, all right, they're going to break out of it, and then they go back into a funk. And I get it, there's ebbs and flows of a baseball season, 162 games, but geez. And then you look at some of the team numbers, and yeah, we lead the league, we lead the entire majors in home runs with 45, but guys, offensively in the National League, we're 10th out of 16 teams in average, 9th in on-base percentage, 7th in runs scored, 13th out of 16 in team ERA. Our pitching stinks. We've been pretty good defensively, a top 3 team in the field. But luckily right now, the Philadelphia Phillies are an 18-15 first place team. The Mets, as I said, overrated. The Washington Nationals, not a threat. You go back to when we did our, you know, spring training bold predictions for the Braves season. I said I thought the Braves would win the NL East by 7 games. I thought the Mets were overrated. I did not want to hear about Lindor and Carrasco. I thought the Phillies and Nationals would be a tick above 500, you know, probably win 83, 84, 85 games. So I think I've been pretty spot on with my assumption of what the National League East is. I just didn't expect the Braves to be where they are. Joe Patrick will join us coming up at 3:20 today. We'll kind of get a measuring stick from him as to where this team is and where he thinks this team is going through one-fifth of the season. Tonight, Vince Velasquez against Ian Anderson, game 2. Of a 3-game set. All right, so let me transition to the Hawks. Nick Cale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So, a pretty exhilarating week for the Atlanta Hawks. Since we were last on last Saturday, they go 3-1 in the last week. They beat the Bulls last Saturday by double digits. They beat Portland 123-114 on Monday. And on Wednesday, just absolutely boat raced the Phoenix Suns, who many people believe could be the best team in the Western Conference, whether you want to look at record, whether you want to project into the playoffs. But they beat the Suns by 32 points, maybe the win of the year for the Hawks. They followed it up Thursday night with a loss to the Pacers in overtime, but a really great week for the Atlanta Hawks. This is courtesy of Mike Conti on Twitter. The Hawks can clinch a top six seed with one more win and one more Charlotte loss with two Boston Celtic losses. And that's what we're looking at right now, guys. We are looking at the race to avoid the six seed. Whether it's getting the four seed, getting the five seed, you want to be in that spot. Two things you want to avoid. You want to avoid the six spot because then you're going to play one of those top three teams in the East, and you want to avoid the absurdity that is the play-in situation, 7 through 10 seeds in the East and West, May 18th through May 21st. So if you're looking at it right now, the New York Knicks have the four seed. They have a half-game lead on us. They lost last night. They have 5 games left. We have 4 games left sitting on the 5 seed. Miami has 5 games left. They are the 6 seed, a half game behind us. And then Boston is the 7 seed, and they have 5 games left. And if you look at all the teams with everything left on the table, I think you can really make the case we had the easiest closing stretch of 4 or 5 games. Hawks have 4 games left. We will play Portland, Phoenix, and Washington at home. The lone road game left of the 4 is at the Indiana Pacers. A little payback spot. The Knicks have 5 games left. They got to play the Clippers. They got to play the Lakers. They got to play the Celtics. They got to play the Spurs. They got to play Charlotte. Miami has a bunch of road games left. 4 of their 5 games on the road. They go to Boston twice for a back-to-back. They get Philadelphia, they get Milwaukee, and they get Detroit. And then you look at the Celtics. They have 2 against the Miami Heat. They have the Knicks on the road to wrap things up. And then they have home games in the middle of that stretch against Cleveland and Minnesota. So I think right now the Hawks have got to feel really good about where they are. The overtime loss to the Pacers. But hey, if this team's going to keep winning 3 out of 4 down the stretch, you're going to secure yourself one of those seeds. And you're going to avoid a Milwaukee, a Brooklyn, a Philadelphia, you know, those top three teams in the Eastern Conference. But the other thing I got to mention too, because I mentioned avoiding the 7 through 10 spots in the East and this whole playoff play-in tournament. I actually agree with LeBron James. It is utterly stupid. 7 through 10, East and West, May 18th through May 21st. And you look in the East, only Boston, 7 through 10, has a winning record. And in the West, only 2 of the 4 teams, 7 through 10, are 500 or above. I don't understand the concept of expanding the access in the playoffs in a sport that has historically never given much of a chance to 7 and 8 seeds. I mean, just pull up on Google how many times an 8 seed has beaten a 1 seed in the history of the NBA playoffs. Compare that to the NHL and the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's not even close. So why are we letting even more mediocre to below 500 teams in and give them an opportunity? LeBron thinks it's stupid. Luka Doncic said it was like confusing. He didn't understand the point of it. I got to tell you, if you're the NBA, and maybe it was all because of, you know, a 72-game season, pandemic, you know, year 2 of this, you know, weird world we're living in, they got to scrap that. When we get back to 100% normalcy next year, I hope to God this thing is gone because it makes absolutely no sense. It's not warranted. It's like expansion in the college football playoff. There's no data that says give us more teams and that will be a better product. Most people don't even care about the first round of the NBA playoffs because it's usually all chalk. All right, 404-741-0929. Good to have you guys in here on a Saturday. We'll come back. We'll talk some Braves. Joe Patrick, our Braves reporter, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He will join us coming up next here on the Nick Cale Show on 92.9 The Game, Odyssey.com, and the Odyssey.com app. All right, great to have you guys in today here on this Saturday. We roll till 6 o'clock, and then it's the show with Jarvis and Tanitra. Looking forward to that. Jarvis will join us at 5:20. Sarah Spencer coming up at 4:20 on the Hawks. But right now, we go out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and we welcome in our man, Smokin' Joe Patrick, Braves reporter for Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Joe, I got to tell you, I saw some of the pictures on the Twitter machine this week with the, we'll just call it the heater in mouth. I got to tell you, God bless the internet, man.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah, it's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, what a great night it was last night too. I got to say, you know, I shared a picture out on the company Twitter from the stadium with all packed full of fans. I mean, I know the game didn't go how all those fans would have liked, I'm sure, mm-hmm. but you know, what a great night to be out there.
Yeah, and the first time that we were allowed to have 100% capacity, the first time that was permitted, 38,000 and change. What was the vibe, the environment? Did it feel like something completely different than we've really experienced in the last year, or did it just feel like business as usual?
It was noticeable. Maybe not completely different for me, considering I've been going to these games all season, and they've kind of been progressing up and up in terms of the attendance allowed. But I mean, it just felt relaxed. But also just like when in this environment, when people have been kind of shut out from being able to attend these events, mm-hmm. everybody who comes is just in a good mood. So like in past years, you would have seen probably booze raining down in that first inning, the way things were going for the Braves. But you know, who could be mad on a night like that, you know, just kind of getting back into the ballpark. And I just felt like people were just happy to be there, and it was just good vibes all around.
Yeah, that was the view I got from television for sure. You know, we're 20% of the way through the season, and I try not to really make any true definitive statements until at least Memorial Day weekend. But, I mean, I'm looking at this, Joe. Lose 4, win 4, lose 4, win 5 of 7, lose 2, win 3, lose 4, win 3, lose last night. I feel like I'm on a roller coaster, and I don't like amusement parks at all. Are you getting the feeling early on? I mean, is it fair at least to say early on right now that maybe this team just might have a little hangover and maybe they're just going to slightly underachieve all year, or is it premature?
Yeah, you know, no, I'm right there with you, man. Like, it does feel like a roller coaster. It does feel like this team, you know, it's like they'll go on a winning streak like they did this week, and they swept Washington, and it feels like good vibes, and, you know, they're happy that they were able to kind of win these stressful games, and you're like, okay, well, this is going to parlay into something that's more consistent and longer term, and then, you know, maybe that will happen. You know, we're only one game off of that, but obviously you come home last night and have a stinker, and it's just like, it is really emotional. And, you know, to be fair, this team has had to deal with some things, you know, some choppier waters early on in the season that they haven't necessarily had to deal with in the past. I mean, a lot of things have gone right for this team this last couple of years, just in terms of guys performing how you would think or even overperforming, and, you know, guys stepping up and playing big roles on the team that you didn't really expect. And this year you've got injuries to some major pieces. You've got a guy in Freddie Freeman who was obviously your MVP last year, who is just not really doing much of anything as of late, especially. So, you know, you think that with the law of large numbers, that any regression that happens is going to be like a positive regression back to their averages. But it does feel like, you know, it's getting kind of that spooky vibe where it's like, you know, this struggle is now kind of pronounced, and we are, like you said, we're 20% through the season. That's a pretty decent chunk. That's a pretty decent sample size so far. And so I am a little bit worried about this team. I mean, I thought that maybe going into the year that they were going to be the clear title favorites for the division title. And now I think it's going to be a major scrap just to get into the playoffs for this team, because it is a competitive division.
Yeah, it's funny you say that with the division, because I never really thought the Mets were going to be a great team. I thought they were overinflated because they're New York. And I thought Philly and Washington would be a couple of games above 500. I just think when you scan this division right now, yeah, competitive, compelling, maybe not the word to use. But we're really fortunate that we could be 20% of the way through the season, have the record we have, and still only be 2.5 games out of first. I mean, we could easily be sitting here looking up 5-6 games back.
Very fortunate. Very fortunate. And Brian Snicker has even said the same thing. And honestly, that is kind of, I think it's telling that Brian Snicker's already talking about the way that the division is shaped up early on in the season, because a lot of times you'll say, like, oh, we're not even looking at the standings until after the All-Star break and or until September or whatever it is. But and I think it's telling that Brian Snicker, among others, have been saying that, you know, it's nice that they're not looking at a big like a huge hill to climb as where they stand right now. But I mean, I think that if you do look at the way that the team is trending, you just don't see necessarily that upward trajectory for this team that's all of a sudden going to explode out of what we were talking about earlier, where the team has just been up and down, up and down, up and down. Now, if you do get Max Fried coming back, I mean, that's a huge bonus. And what we saw from him in his last start, I think it had to have been so encouraging, not just for the team and the fans, but for the players to see a guy come back. And if you get Max Fried back in his top form, then that's like you're getting an ace. That's like a new signing almost, especially compared to the way he was pitching earlier this season. And of course, you have Mike Soroka who could come back too. And so you have potentially things that could you know, benefit you down the line. But I just think that right now, this team knows it's in a slog. This team knows that, you know, they've got struggling hitters. They know that they probably don't have the same confidence in their bullpen that they would have had last year. So I think that, you know, there are some challenges for this team, but they are, to get back to your point, they are very fortunate that this division is so tight as it is at the moment.
Joe Patrick joining us here, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let me get to Morton. You know, last night, another one of those bizarre, you know, it's weird because he gave up 6 runs, but they all go down as unearned due to the passed ball. And I'm looking at his season log so far, 3 bad starts, 3 quality to pretty good starts, and then 1 so-so. This is not so much a anti-Charlie Morton question to you, but I just feel like this is one of those things that, well, this is what you're going to get if you are Liberty Media. Mm-hmm. Morton's ERA is 5. Smiley is over 6. I mean, this is what you get on the back end when you take this approach, right?
Yeah, I mean, Morton has had a really interesting season so far. I think he's been really kind of hard done by, and his stats really don't reflect how his stuff has been. I mean, I remember a couple starts ago, he gave up a grand slam. I think he gave up 4 runs in his start. And Brian Snicker talked to him afterwards. He was like, I thought he was going to throw a no-hitter in that game because the stuff was so good. And that's been the story with Morton all season long. It's just been like one inning where the runs just won't stop coming across the plate, and it kind of balloons his ERA and things like that. But the stuff has generally been good. I do think there are clearly a lot more questions about Drew Smiley. It was great to see him, you know, I know it was a relief for Smiley himself, but of course, you know, for Alex Anthopoulos in the front office to see him finally get a good start, because it's been really rough. And I think that people were already questioning. I mean, I know I was hearing from Braves fans saying they need to cut the guy. I mean, I think it's too early to do that, obviously, but, you know, with an $11 million signing, you expect somebody like that to perform, and that's $11 million that they are not going to be able to spend on the bullpen, and maybe, you know, that's more money than a lot of people thought he was going to get on the market. So he is kind of in a position where he needs to perform, and these two guys, Morton and Smiley especially, like you said, they're going to be big pieces. The Braves, if they want to make the postseason, they need those guys to step up. They're not going to be able to really do what they did last year, where they kind of were able to piece together a starting rotation and kind of ride their bullpen through 60 games. I mean, if last season was 160 games and they had that happen to them, I don't know if they make it. I mean, what happened last year was really remarkable for this team. Fortunately, they've had Waskar Yanoa step up, who's really provided a little bit of stability to this rotation. But yeah, I mean, they're going to need all these guys down the stretch, and you just hope that they can all get on the same track, you know, or get on track at the same time, so this team can kind of go on a run. That's what's really propelled them these last couple years, is they go on a hot streak where they just are tearing it up for a 6-week period. They build a lead in the division, you know, and that's what you would hope to see out of this team. But it's looking, you know, who knows if that's going to happen anytime soon.
You mentioned Waskar Yanoa. I mean, right now his WHIP is 0.90. His ERA 2.36. Is through 20% of the season, is he the biggest story through 1/5 of the year, or do we have to defer to Ronald Acuna?
I mean, yeah, I think he's the biggest positive story, honestly. I mean, I know Acuna got off to that scorching hot start. I think another story that might rival it on the other end is Freddie Freeman with just how surprising how poor he's been. But, yeah, I mean, Waskar Yanoa, you look at him, and he's a guy who's kind of come out of nowhere, because when you look at the Braves' young prospects that are kind of pushing for time in the starting rotation. You think of Kyle Wright, Bryce Wilson, these kind of blue chippers who have been around for a long time. We've heard a lot about. They've obviously had a lot of opportunities. And Walker, you know, hasn't been that guy, but he did get an opportunity last year. I think he really impressed Brian Snicker. He really impressed the front office. And then he's come out this year and just been fantastic. He's had one bad start, and that is it. Outside of that start, he's been dominant, really. And I think what's really impressive, it's easy to forget that he is 2 or 3 years younger than Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson as well. So it's like he's got a lot more potential. And he's already, you know, one of the impressive things about him is he's got a good fastball, got a really good breaking ball and a slider. But, you know, as a two-pitch pitcher, I think that was always the question mark a lot of people had with him as a starter. You know, you can get by with two pitches as a reliever, but what's really impressive is that he's been able to develop a changeup and already working that into his repertoire this season, which was something that Brian Snicker kind of requested. He was like, he needs to, you know, use a changeup, and that will really improve those other two pitches. He's been able to do that fantastically. And then he's also, you know, just blasting home runs. So no big deal about that either, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. Joe Patrick joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. You know, I thought it was interesting. You alluded to Freddie Freeman, and I'm always fascinated by the way professional athletes handle contract years or the year following when they get that type of commitment. Freddie's in a contract year. Marcel got his long-term payday, and both of them are struggling, whether it's, you know, at the plate from a stat standpoint. I don't know if they're just being first pitch swinging, overly aggressive, what it is, but do you think that the whole contract thing is kind of looming over Freddie, and that maybe explains the .95 average?
I don't know, of course, but I can't, like, it's hard for me to imagine that it's not, right? Because this is just so different than anything we've seen from Freddie Freeman in his career. And what is really interesting to me and kind of worrying is, you know, in these last couple games he's played, he's swinging and missing at balls that are not even close to the strike zone. Like, he's really expanding his zone with two strikes, and it's not working out. And that's just not something you see from a guy like Freddie, who's really, you know, got a ton of discipline at the plate and has a really good approach, knows exactly what he wants to do when he gets up there. I think with Marcelo Zuna, it's a little different. He just got off to a slow start, and I think he is kind of turning the corner now. Hit a home run against Washington. He's hitting the ball hard again. Had another, you know, hit last night. So I think that he is turning the corner. But with Freddie Freeman, I think that it would certainly make me feel a lot better if tomorrow or today they announced that he had a new contract. You know, I don't know if that would actually make a difference, but it would certainly make me feel better. And I can't help but think that that's something that's kind of looming over this whole situation, whether it's impacting him actually or not.
All right, final one for you. This team currently 13th out of 16 teams in the National League in team ERA. They are 10th out of 16 at the plate. Right now, I tell you, fast forward 3 weeks, get us to Memorial Day weekend. What comes around sooner, the bats or the arms?
I think the arms. I think that ERA will improve. I think that the team is kind of working some things out in the bullpen where they're finding the right pieces and some guys are gaining confidence there. And then, again, something I talked about a little bit earlier, but Max Fried, him coming back, he's obviously going to really improve the starting rotation. And I think the kind of thing that we don't really talk about as much with Max Fried coming back is, you know, evaluating him starting the season. I mean, when he went down with his injury, he had an ERA in the double digits through three starts. He was just not the same Max Fried that we were accustomed to. And, you know, he talked about when he went down injured, he was able to evaluate his mechanics, and he was seeing things that he was, you know, that were not right. He was rushing to the plate, just not really being having the same delivery that he has had these last couple of years. And so I think that we saw the benefits of that in his start when he returned, and I think we'll continue to see that. And then if they can get Soroka back, obviously that's going to improve things even more. And I think, again, talking about what we said with Charlie Morton earlier as well, I think that ERA will naturally come down. He's just run into some really bad luck so far this season.
Joe Patrick, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate the time on a Saturday. Thanks for popping on.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, Nick.
You got it. Joe Patrick with us, Braves reporter, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, we're going to get Soroka back, and obviously Max Fried will be back, and that's going to feel like a double shot in the arm, no pun intended. I just got to think the bats, you know, as much as I like Max, obviously, and we'll see about Mike Soroka, but as the weather continues to warm up, and by the way, the weather in the South, April and May this year, has been very bizarre. A little cooler than normal, I feel like we've had more rain than usual, just dreary, overcast. As it gets hot and it gets humid, I think those bats are going to come to life. All right, 404-741-0929 if you want to jump in on any reaction to what Joe had to say. We are going to take Falcons calls coming up at 4 o'clock because up next I got two little tidbits I want to get to with the Atlanta Falcons post-NFL draft. One has to do with the schedule. Schedule release show coming up this Wednesday, May the 12th. And also the skill players with the addition of Kyle Pitts. We'll get to those two little nuggets on the Atlanta Falcons, and then we're going to rock some Falcons calls at 4 o'clock. And oh, by the way, too, Mother's Day weekend. We're going to have some fun with some of the greatest TV moms a little later in the show. Nick Kale Show. Good to have you guys in. Saturday, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey.com app. .341 here on a Saturday. Good to have you guys in as we roll till 6 o'clock. We'll get to a little Atlanta Hawks coming up at 4:20. Sarah Spencer from the AJC will stop by. Jarvis Davis in the final hour on the Atlanta Falcons, which is where we go now. Post-NFL draft conversation. And one more domino to fall in the offseason, that is the National Football League. The schedule release show coming up this Wednesday, May the 12th. And I'm sure it'll get leaked throughout the day on Twitter. We know who the Falcons will play. We just don't know the order, weeks 1 through 18. And what it's going to look like 1 through 17 game-wise. You know, it's interesting. Mike Clay is one of those stats and numbers projection type of guy for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Clay NFL. And I saw this kind of just circulating throughout Falcons Twitter this week, and a lot of Falcons fans feeling relatively good about what could be for this year based on the schedule. Because according to Mike Clay, the Atlanta Falcons will have the second easiest schedule in the NFL. And I've always found this interesting because when you look at the NFL, it's kind of year to year the most unpredictable. I mean, the NBA, by and large, you know, what happened last year probably happens the next year with, you know, the marquee stars, the top two, three in the East, top two or three in the West, which conference LeBron is in. We kind of know the way the NBA is going to shake out. You know, baseball, you know, it's kind of hit or miss. Some years it's, you know, it's chalk. It's predictable. It's the Dodgers. It's the Yankees. And maybe they don't really make a push. Like the New York Yankees, you know, maybe don't get to the World Series. But, you know, there are some surprises in baseball. But in the NFL, you know, on average, and I've heard this for years and years and years, and maybe it's kind of been altered a little bit, but on average, give or take, four or five new teams make the playoffs out of 12 the following year. So we do get some turnover, some surprises, some new division winners, some, you know, shockers in the wild card. But I'm looking at the NFC South, and the Carolina Panthers will have the 18th easiest schedule. The Saints, right literally smack dead middle of the league, 16th. And then the top two easiest schedules, go figure, it's the Atlanta Falcons at number 2, and it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at number 1. The defending world champions and Tom Brady have the easiest schedule. After winning it all in a pandemic year with an influx of new talent and restrictions on how you can kind of assemble. Scary to think what Tom Brady at 54 years old this year might do in year number 2 with the Bucs. But here we are, the Falcons' second easiest schedule. Now, this is obviously not the schedule in order because we don't know it, but the Falcons will play at Carolina, home to the Jets, home to Detroit, at the Giants, at the Bills, home to Carolina, at New Orleans, home to Washington and Philly, at Dallas, home to New England, at San Francisco, at Miami, home to Tampa Bay, home to New Orleans, at Tampa Bay, at Jacksonville. Now, on paper, I got to tell you, just looking at those teams' names and how they did in the draft and how they did in the offseason and free agency, it doesn't feel like the second easiest schedule in the NFL. But I don't have all the metrics that Mike Clay looks at to formulate this. But I would say this, and look, I'm looking for positives. Trust me. I'm not trying to be negative on the Falcons, but our free agency offseason is kind of summed up with, Mike Davis. You know, our draft, Kyle Pitts, and then after that, I think if we're being honest, we have a lot of questions. We don't know a whole heck of a lot about rounds 2 through 6. I mean, we all know Kyle Pitts is going to be a stud. But based on the talent on this team and what they acquired via free agency and the draft, do we feel right now with that, plus the schedule, and apparently it's the second easiest out of 32 teams, is this team good enough to get enough wins to roll into the month of December with a chance for a playoff berth? And remember, 7 teams now make the playoffs in the NFC. We've got 4 division winners, and we've got 3 wild cards. So do we think this team, and oh, by the way, with the addition of a new head coach in Arthur Smith, a very good play caller, a guy who absolutely gets the most out of his quarterback, and the addition of Dean Pease, one of the 7 or 8 best defensive coordinators this league has seen the last 25 years, is this team good enough with all the things we've added? New head coach / play caller, new DC, new front office executive, a unicorn at tight end in the draft, an upgrade at running back, and the second easiest schedule behind only Tampa Bay, which is very scary to say. Is this team good enough to be a playoff team? What is your feeling right now? Because once the schedule comes out this Wednesday, you know, we're all going to look at it Thursday and Friday and into next weekend, try to figure out, okay, where's a little stretch that we can navigate and manage? You know, you break down the NFL in chunks of 4, the first quarter, the second quarter. All right, how many games are at home? Where's our bye? Do we have a trap game? All of those types of things. And we'll have somewhat of a feeling as to what this team can be. But until we get that right now at this very moment, what do you guys think? 404-741-0929. Because once the schedule comes out and we get through next weekend, yeah, you've got some of the the mandatory mini camps, and then some of the voluntary workouts, and then you go through May and June, and then we get camp and we get 2-a-days. And then boom, next thing you know, it's exhibition games, and before you know it, the season is here. Now, a lot of this, and by the way, Mike Clay notes, these strength of schedules are predicated on the current NFL roster of said team as of May 4th. You know, we could still, and I don't think it'll happen, but the Julio Jones thing and his future with the Falcons still kind of lingering and hovering above this franchise. I heard Chuckery towards the end of his show in the final hour, you know, talking about Julio Jones and, you know, the rock and a hard place this team is between. You know, something's got to happen, whether it's a restructuring of Julio, a restructuring of Grady Jarrett. We'll see. But as of right now, Julio Jones is an Atlanta Falcon. And I still think at the end of the day, when we get to week 1 of the 2021 NFL season, Julio will be a Falcon. But my opinion right now is no, I do not think this team is good enough. I still think there are issues with the offensive line. There are issues with the pass rush. There are issues on the back end of the secondary. But the offense, and here's the second question. Now, when you look at the addition of Kyle Pitts, do we have enough skill players, and are we elite enough at the skill player position or group on offense that this team is good enough to overcome those deficiencies I pointed out, whether it's the offensive line, protecting Matt and or establishing the run, the front seven getting after the quarterback, and the back end of the secondary not getting gashed and giving up chunk plays vertically down the field. That's the part where I am intrigued and I'm positive about. Because you look at Matt Ryan, you look at Julio, Calvin, Kyle, Mike Davis, Hayden Hurst, Cordarrelle Patterson, Russell Gage. If this offensive line can just somehow be middle of the road, both as far as establishing the run and protecting Matt and providing that balance that this team desperately missed last year, then I think, yeah, you got a shot. You can at least get it to the point of the season where you're playing meaningful football as we get towards Thanksgiving. Because let's face it, we were in early October last year. I mean, we didn't even make it to Halloween and our season was shot. Dunzo, kaput, 0-5, blowing all those leads. I don't need to go back and give you a revisionist history of the 2020 season, but for three quarters, we looked like, and I'm referring to three quarters of a four-quarter game, we looked like a team that could certainly do something if we could find a way to close things out. So kind of a two-parter right here. Number one, the strength of schedule. According to Mike Clay of ESPN, our Atlanta Falcons have the second easiest schedule in the National Football League. Are we good enough to get to where we need to be record-wise? You know, that 9-10 range to get to the playoffs. And then secondly, you look at the skill players as a collective group. Are we elite enough amongst our peers to be so good offensively that, yeah, we're not going to go to the Super Bowl, but we could be a playoff team and kind of look like a Big 12 college football team on a Saturday. We can score, score, score. We can't stop anybody, but we can score. And that's enough to get us 9 or 10 wins, a 7 seed, a 6 seed, a wild card, and get to the playoffs. Because you look at our collection of talent, I mean, just think about it. Are we as good as two other teams in this division? You start with the Saints, Alvin Kamara, Mike Thomas, some of their other weapons. You go to Tampa Bay, Tom Brady, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, Gronk, Cameron Brait, Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones. Are we as good at the skill position as the Kansas City Chiefs? Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, Travis Kelce, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know, the Steelers, Najee Harris, Juju Smith-Schuster, Chase Claypool. They drafted Pat Freiermuth from Penn State. Pittsburgh, if Ben Roethlisberger can somehow find just an ounce from the fountain of youth, maybe that offense will be good again. Where are we skill-wise compared to the best groups in the NFL? And is our second easiest schedule good enough to navigate to playoff contention? We'll get that definitive answer when the schedule comes out on Wednesday. But what's your feeling right now? We'll come back. We'll take your calls. A lot of people want to jump in, and we will do so. 404-741-0929. A lot of calls already on board. Couple of open spots. If you want to jump in, 404-741-0929. We'll rock your calls for the next 20 minutes when we come back. Nick Kale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.